With 299 victims over 25 years, why wasn't serial rapist Joël Le Squarnec stopped sooner? Closing arguments in the trial of the 74-year-old surgeon in the western French city of Vannes. We'll ask about a man convicted of purchasing a pedophile porn online 2 decades ago. And yet investigators failed to uncover worse crimes. And the medical board allowed him to continue to practice. We'll ask about the case and the context. France's largest ever sex abuse trial concludes as the nation discovers decades of abuse at the Bitaram Catholic School in the southwest, a school attended by the children of the current prime minister, François Bayrou, whose wife worked at the school. He insistently denies knowing at the time. At what point does it become a cover-up? And when does deference cross a line in a nation where children are taught to obey authority figures? Most important are, of course, the victims. On the stand, Joël Le Squarnec eventually did confess. But to plaintiffs, his answers sounded mechanical. Why is it so often the victims who feel the shame? Two of them even committed suicide. How to overcome that shame and find closure? Today in the France 24 debate, we're looking at the Le Squarnec serial rape trial. With us from the Brittany seaside city of Vannes, where the trial is taking place, he's been covering it for news site Mediapart, journalist Hugo Lemonnier, author in French of Trapped, Inside the Personal Diary of Dr. Le Squarnec. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
From Grenoble, Mie Koyama, co-founder of Brave Movement and Be Brave France. Tell us what Be Brave France is.
So Be Brave France is the French branch of the Brave Movement, which is a movement created by survivors for survivors of child sexual violence and to end child sexual violence.
Solène Potvin-Favre is co-director of CIVIS, the French president-appointed independent commission on incest and sexual violence against children, and also president of Face à l'Inceste, Facing Incest Advocacy Group. We'll talk more about some of the proposals you've made. They're going to try perhaps to make them into law later in this conversation. And Catherine Porter, international correspondent for The New York Times. Good to see you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
If you're on the go, by the way, you can listen to the show wherever podcasts are streamed. Most of his patients, underage. Many assaulted or raped while under post-op sedation. Caris Garland has more on the trial of Joël Le Squarnec.
He's set to emerge from the trial as one of France's most prolific convicted sexual predators. Former surgeon Joël Le Squarnec has admitted to 111 rapes and 189 sexual assaults at a dozen hospitals. He attacked victims, most of them children, while they were under anaesthetic or waking up from an operation. Addressing the courtroom in the Western Brittany region last week, prosecutors asked he serve the maximum penalty of 20 years in jail. They also made the rare demand that he's held in a centre for treatment and supervision even after any release.
Personally, I was thinking 20 years or more. Unfortunately, the law doesn't allow for more, but the prosecutor did request it, and that's important. The mandatory treatment, the ban on residing in certain areas of France.
Last week, one of Le Squarnec's lawyers said his client was utterly guilty, but highlighted what he called the 74-year-old's respect for the justice system.
Mr. Le Squarnec has been, as you've seen throughout the hearing, extremely respectful and attentive to each statement made. It is in this spirit of respect and humanity that we will plead his case.
Many victims and their families have questioned the sincerity of Le Squarnec's words of regret, like this woman whose grandson was a victim and committed suicide.
We can't believe him. Even if he knelt before me, I wouldn't believe him.
The victims are calling on the government to draw lessons from the trial. They say they were let down by a system that allowed Le Squarnec to continue working until his retirement in 2017, even after a 2005 conviction for owning child pornography. As they took the stand, some health officials and hospital managers denied any wrongdoing, saying the lack of surgeons left them with no other choice.
And before we turn to our panel, let's get a summary of the closing arguments this Monday by the defense, France 24's Lisa Kamenoff at the courthouse.
After 3 months of trial, Joël Le Squarnec gave his closing statements at court ahead of deliberations. "I'm not seeking any leniency," he said. "I simply ask for the right to become a better person and to find the humanity which I sorely lacked." The surgeon, who'd admitted to all charges in court of sexually assaulting and raping some 299 victims, the defense, whose arguments throughout the last 3 months focused on humanizing Le Squarnec, painting him as a man haunted by his pedophilia, which has driven him into isolation for years with no medical support, only finding comfort in his sexual abuse crimes. The defense's strategy was also marked with Le Squarnec's repeated apologies to victims at the stand, with the accused shedding tears several times during testimonies and even going beyond the prosecuted acts, admitting to unprosecuted crimes like the assault of his own six-month-old granddaughter. The defense also pointed out his willingness to cooperate and said he's not seeking to shorten the sentence, but simply to acknowledge the victims and take responsibility. The prosecution has demanded a 20-year sentence followed by a security detention period for the accused due to a high risk of reoffending. If sentenced, the 20-year term will run separately to the 15 years he's already serving for a 2020 conviction of child sex abuse. Deliberations are now underway, with a verdict expected this Wednesday.
Hugo Le Monnier, repeated apologies by Le Squarnec, telling the court he doesn't want any leniency. How will that go down? How did that go down with his victims?
The victims can't really trust him because of his expertise. Because the expert said that he was a real pervert that can't really recognize the others. He can't. The others as a person. He can't see them as person. So it's really hard for the victims to live in
Hugo, we're going to try to call you back because there's a bit of the sound dipping in and out. We're going to try to fix that. For it. Mie Koyama, has Joël Le Squarnec changed over the last 3 months, in your view?
If you allow me, I prefer not to comment on this criminal because I think first of all, I didn't follow the trial. I wasn't at the trial, but my first thoughts are going to the victims and survivors of Joël Le Squarnec, because 299 victims and survivors, more survivors, because some of them were affected by status of mutation. This is trauma, this is depression, this is eating disorders, this is addictions. And shall we not forget also two deaths, one of overdoses that your reporter talked about, and the other one from suicide.
Yeah, so Solène Potvin-Favre, on Wednesday we'll have the verdict. Again, a three-month trial. What's changed in 3 months?
I think you just asked to me if Joël Le Squarnec has changed over the course of these 3 months. I think the strategy has changed. So he said repeatedly that he was sorry and that, yes, he recognized the crime and all, but it was very cold and not from the heart. We could see that. And we were all waiting for something out from him on the emotion side, on the heart side. And maybe this has changed a bit. Now, I think what has changed in the society, we had great hope over this trial because we were thinking that this will be a game changer in the protection of child and protection of sexual abuse in France. But we can see at the end of these 3 months that it's not completely the case. It's like people did not really care that much. Thank you for having this debate today. But I think over the last 3 months, it was really like whispered, but not really completely taken as a
It wasn't talked debate. About enough in the public space.
Yeah, I feel that strong because the scale of the crime, like 299 victims, we know that it's much more than that. Huh? We have all the forgotten victims, but for this trial, it was 299. The scale of the crime really make people think it's just like exceptional case, which is not exceptional case. I mean, it's just because the society just let him do completely, repeatedly his crime that we come to this end with 299 and much more than that. So it's not completely exceptional, but it was seen as something very exceptional, and then people did not really take that for granted and did not really... I mean, look at this trial from far, because they did not invest themselves. It's not going to happen tomorrow to me. And again, I think the second reason is the taboo of incest. Everything started with incest, and we know in this society in France, incest is really, really a taboo. And everything has started with incest. And we know that if the incest, so the root cause, if it has been really worked on, if the first, like the sister-in-law in 1983, if she would have spoken out, then we would not have any victims outside of the family. So everything started with incest. And incest is a taboo. And maybe that's also another reason why people, they don't really take this this trial really seriously.
Yeah, because Joël Le Squarnec's father had preyed upon family members.
Yeah, we can see in this family, it's at each and every stage. I mean, incest is all around. So even the sister-in-law, for example, she saw something in 1983. But because she was herself a victim of incest, she was thinking that what she has seen is maybe not exactly just because of her own history. Then she did not look at the real fact, but just thinking that she is a bit biased with what she has lived her in herself. So the incest is at each and every stage in that family history.
Catherine Porter, do you share that assessment that it has failed to capture the public's imagination, this three-month trial, the way it should have?
I think most trials of sexual abuse do not capture the public's attention the way they should. I think we've just come out of a Pellicot trial, which gripped the nation by its throat in a way that is entirely unusual. And when we take that and we compare it to Le Squarnec, no, we didn't have the same reaction. But, you know, even with the Pellicot trial, at the time you didn't see powerful politicians speaking about it. To this day, we haven't seen very many proposals by government itself to put in place measures to protect women. It definitely caused a lot of soul searching in the country and discussion, but I don't know that it has really pushed massive changes forward the way that that kind of roar of attention would deserve. So I agree with you that there was less media coverage. To a degree, there was not huge international coverage like there was of the Pellicot trial, but there certainly were people like Hugo, who's with us today, and France Info, and very many local journalists from Le Monde, etc., were there day in and day out covering this trial. So if you were interested in this, it was readily available to learn about. But I also agree with you that, you know, there was silence within this family. We heard that within the first week. Really remarkable amounts of incest and abuse from the grandfather to Joël Le Squarnec announcing to the shock of the court that he had also abused his youngest grandchild, you know, to the horror of his son, to his other son talking about how his grandfather had abused him, to his sister, his wife, saying she had been a victim of abuse herself. So there was lots of layers of silence there. And then, of course, the other question I'm sure we're going to talk about here is the silence of the system, the larger yeah. system that did nothing to protect victims. Starting after 2005, when it was known that he was convicted of downloading child abuse images.
Yeah, and the medical board in particular, we'll get back to that point. But Hugo Lemonnier, let me ask you, that silence, you usually in a trial, all the evidence is prepared ahead of time. In this case, We saw the silence that Catherine Porter was mentioning broken during the proceedings itself.
Yes, but at some point, there's still a mystery because Joël Le Squarnec has been able to make that amount of victims just in front of sometimes his colleagues. And all his colleagues have been thinking for many years that it was some medical examination. So the question is, how many Le Squarnec have we in the hospitals? Because at some point, if he could have done that, others can do it too.
Is that just because he was a surgeon, so a figure of authority, what the French call a notable, a notable, in a small city like Vannes, and that therefore you don't question what the doctor says or does?
I don't know. I think most certainly it's because he's a surgeon, so he has an access to the body of the patients, and usually you don't question the acts of a surgeon. And it's true in Vannes, it's true in Paris, it's true in Arizona or anywhere else in the world. So we had before other crimes like this committed by doctors, by surgeons in France, in the United States, in England, everywhere. So we need to understand that kind of criminality and how we can stop them.
Catherine Porter, just a question on this, because medical doctor, if you make the wrong decision, it is a life or death decision. And so doctors do have this kind of outsized power. Your thoughts on what can be changed, particularly because the Medical Review Board in 2006 decided to let him continue practicing. And as we heard in that report at the outset, partially arguing because there weren't enough doctors around.
Well, they didn't quite argue that, but they, entirely. There were many moments that, in fact, the alarm bells were ringing all over. What happened was, one of the doctors at the hospital at the time where Le Squarnec was working got word from a phone call from someone that about his conviction and essentially confronted him and then started ringing the alarm bells to the head of the hospital, to the board, as you mentioned, at the Finistère level. And then the alarms are going up through, as you know, France has a really elaborate bureaucracy that exists within the healthcare system. So it was hitting the departmental level, the Bretagne level, and going all the way up to Paris. And everyone was kind of a little bit worried. But, you know, what we heard in court was many of the experts said, well, you know, he was convicted in 2005, but he was only given 4 months sentence. He didn't have to serve it. It was a vex sursi. It was, you know,
suspended sentence.
Suspended sentence from the get-go. And there was nothing in the ruling saying he needed to have some kind of therapy or oversight within the hospital system. So some of the people within the system said, well, you know, who are we to question the judge's ruling? We even heard a doctor who still is in the system saying, I didn't really know how to, you know, patrol downloading sexual abuse imagery. We don't have any protocol on that in the hospital. And then, as you mentioned, the head of the hospital, even though he had been alerted, was facing a closure of his surgery and was very worried about, you know, and in the end, the surgery unit was closed. And he was desperate to keep a doctor to keep his surgery open. But despite that, and that's all these alarm bells going, Le Squarnec could continue traveling and getting hired by someone who headed another hospital who knew about his conviction. He was the one who told her. And she told the court, you know, he got a recommendation from his last hospital. The minister told me, the ministry said I was clear to hire him. What did he want me to do? Nothing more. I did everything, and I was facing closure of my own surgery. So, you know, there were lots of alarm bells ringing, and in the end, Nothing happened. And, you know, no one even put in place some kind of protocol to make sure that when Lesquarnec was treating children, that someone was watching him.
So, Solène Potvin-Favre, do the rules already exist for that? And there was a failure in enforcing the current rules? Or is new legislation needed?
So, you see, we take on the balance between, so we balance between the lack of doctor in an area and the protection of children. So this should never happen. I mean, the child protection should be always the top priority. How come we can balance the two? So, at the end, I feel that it's very convenient to have Joël Lesquarnec in the only one in the dock. I mean, we should have all the other ones who encourage by the silence or who legitimate what he has done just by silence and just keeping quiet of what we do. In France, it was in 2004 when he got this sanction about the possession of child pornography pictures. And I think in France our system should evolve because it's not seen as a very dangerous sign. And while still, it's just imagine, it's just someone who take sexual pleasure just to look at the picture or the video of a child being raped. How come it's only so a low sign, considered as so low sign? It's not possible. I mean, we need to change the regulation. We need to make sure that any professional working close to children will be screened.
So there are new rules that have come in, following up again on what Catherine said in the last decade on whistleblowing. How does that work with the medical profession?
So it's only for those who are hired permanently. So for those who just act on a short-term basis, it's not screened. And so it's only in some cases, but not all. So I think now with the CVs, we had this recommendation. It was in the report that was given to the government in November 2023. And we have this recommendation to screen systematically any professional working close to children, and systematically, but also regularly. So at the beginning, but also like on a yearly basis. Mm-hmm.
Miya Koyama, how does France compare to other neighboring countries when it comes to what was just described there by Solène, screening people, raising red flags when people go to child pornography, that sort?
Yes, absolutely. The sentence, the suspended sentence of Joël Lesquarnec was a real catastrophe. Because he himself told the law enforcement that this suspended sentence didn't stop him from raping. So there's a major problem. And also the head of the hospital who hired him later on said that, you know, it was only child sexual violence images. So it's true that the child sexual violence online is a major problem, and all countries have the same problems. So we are trying to tackle this problem at a European scale. And what I want to say is that for victims and survivors, it's very important that we take measures in order to have such crimes at this scale not happen again. And there are two major measures that we are asking for. One of them is abolishing statute of limitation, because once again, 80 survivors of Joël Lesquarnec were not acknowledged as victims. And the second measure we are asking, for which the Prime Minister pledged in his hearing on May 14th, is the installment of a victims' council, because victims and survivors know the flaws of the system, have experienced the gaps, and can very efficiently recommend public policies to end child sexual violence and child violence as a whole.
Hugo Le Monnier, would you say, when you come across the statements during the trial, even his own children who had trouble acknowledging what happened, would you call this a cover-up, or would you call it simply that other doctors think, well, he's a doctor too, so we just defer to a person in position of power. Is there a cover-up, and do you agree with Solène that doctors should, the people from the medical board, for instance, should be in the dock as well?
A cover-up would mean that people knew that he was assaulting and raping child in the hospital, and nobody knew. At least it hasn't been proven. So I wouldn't say a cover-up. I would say that we haven't been thinking about the flaws of our system. And in itself, it's a huge responsibility and it's a huge risk for the entire society.
A huge risk because?
A huge risk because if Joël Le Squarnec has been able to rape and to sexually assault child in hospitals, others can and others will. Until we haven't think through it, we'll take that risk. It's like this catastrophe is like an airplane crash. When you have 300 dead people, we were not debating about the fact that we may be open a debate at some point on the problem that led to the crash. We must act, and we need to look at these flaws. I think this case file is particular because we have all the flaws, from the justice to the gendarmerie to the medical board to the hospitals, everything.
And just as far from swift, to begin the first cases that were on trial date back to 1989, as Mie was saying, there were others that are under a statute of limitation and therefore not even considered by the court. Things that take a long time in the news. Earlier this month, France's prime minister testifying before a parliamentary commission about years of abuse in the Betaram Catholic School. That's outside of Pau in the southwest, where Bayrou is still the mayor. Many of the revelations point to the period when he was education minister. That was decades ago. And yet he says he was kept in the dark, even by his own children who attended the school. They say they never told about what they saw and endured.
You're saying I was alerted many times. That's not true. I was not alerted. There were 25 years of absolute silence, and all I knew, I learnt from the press. I will demonstrate this. And finally, you said I opted to stay silent for 30 years. Those who chose to stay silent are those who knew and said nothing.
Those who chose to stay silent are those who knew and said nothing. Mie Koyama, your reaction?
Well, when I see the Prime Minister talking, I think he embodies a kind of, bourgeoisie and decision makers like France have the great secret to do. And seriously speaking, he also the Betaram School scandal and also the Joël Le Squarnec trial affair illustrate the collective denial. This is one thing, and the collective denial, which is affecting every layer of the society. So to begin with, I mean, in the Joël Le Squarnec case, this is a perpetrator who was raping children under anesthesia. So how do you want them to talk? And then there's psychotrauma, there's the repressed memory.
You talk about the concept of traumatic amnesia.
Absolutely, repressed memory. Because when Le Squarnec raped those little kids, they were under anesthesia, and many of these kids who became adults learned they were raped because there was evidence of the rape by the police officers. And it was a terrible trauma for many of them. We have to speak also about how we train law enforcement officers to receive this kind of cases because they are not trained. So repressed memory is a mechanism, traumatic amnesia, as you told, is a mechanism that makes when a little child is raped, it's a terrible and terrifying trauma that can, go in a place of the brain where you, in a way, you forget it, and it can search like 10, 20, 30, 40 years afterwards. This is why it's very important that all the society understands better the trauma effect and also the law enforcement, and also it's linked to how can we prevent impunity in this case, because Joël Losquarnec has been left, he has committed all this crime because there was a kind of impunity. And so this is linked also to how we can do better things in matters of abolishing statute of limitations and better have the justice system tackle these sexual cases better in France, because there is an incredible percentage of dismissal also.
Mie Koyama, you wrote a book 10 years ago called The Little White Bicycle about your personal ordeal. And what's changed in those 10 years?
I would say that people speak, the society speaks more. Victims and survivors have taken the floor, are speaking publicly, are engaging themselves. That has changed a lot. And these scandals and cases are multiplying. So this is the reason why now the society cannot be blind against these issues, this public health problem, and decision makers have to take very strong measures. I want to express my full solidarity also with the victims of Joël Losquarnec, because they are asking, and Hugo was speaking about the flaws, they are asking about an interministerial commission to study the flaws of this case and to have to make sure this kind of impunity of the decades doesn't happen again. And once again, we at the Brave Movement, Be Brave Fans, are asking the creation of a victims council that the Prime Minister pledged to do, and we are asking him to keep his commitments.
Catherine Porter, in the case of, we mentioned it just a moment ago, victims getting the police to believe their story for women, it's proved difficult. There's been sensitivity training for the police forces in France over the last decade. It's doubly difficult when it's children, especially if this is, we're talking about in these cases, suppressed memories.
Well, I don't know that it's been done that much for women either. There aren't that many specialized forces in France that have been have had that training. In fact, the statistics show... To take the deposition. And one of the arguments that this group and others have made is that there should be specialized, you know, centers that you go even within the hospital, you know, and when you go to have a rape test or you go to be treated, you can speak to not just your doctor, but the police who are trained and take you in an unmarked car home. So there's lots of, like, clearly France has a long way to go on a lot of this. I think this case with Losquarnec is super interesting, because it's the inverse of what most cases are. Here we had a doctor, we had the culprit, and then the police went looking for the victims. Usually it's the victims who come to the police and have to convince the police that they are victims. Here, because Losquarnec had left his diaries and these list of his victims, the police were calling and knocking on the doors of victims to say, you know, were you a patient in Vannes, in Finistère, somewhere else, in Quimperlé, in Jean-Zac? Do you maybe remember a surgeon by the name of Joël Losquarnec? And in this case, many of the victims said that, you know, that came as a complete bombshell. It was a secondary trauma. They were told and then kind of left on the side of the street to collect their lives and their emotions, and without any kind of support of what that news would do to them. And some of these victims have said, well, as you mentioned, that two have committed or have died. A number talked about their families breaking up. Others have gone to psychiatric hospitals. And it's a really interesting case because many of them had no memory. As Mia was saying, there was suppressed memory, or they were so young that they have no, you know, when you're 4 or 5, many of us don't really remember things that happen when you're 4 or 5. And some of them who did tell their parents were not believed. And they said that they learned at that age, you know, that their point, or when they told someone that things weren't right, they weren't believed, and that became part of their makeup of who they are today. So there's lots of learnings from this case in terms of not just how we talk to victims who were once children, but how we deal with victims in general and make sure they have some kind of psychological follow-up, and that they're told in a way, perhaps with someone who's there with them, who can help them afterwards. And then, many of the women of sex abuse and rape trials will say that they often never even hear back from the police to see if their cases, you know, if the culprit has been put in mise en examen, has been charged formally and if their trial will go, they never hear back. So there's lots of, I think, breakages there that both this case and other cases in France have shown.
Okay, so you have already a series of recommendations in your blue ribbon panel that's to the president that's spelled out. What's the low-hanging fruit? What's the piece of legislation that they could do now and it would address some of the issues the panel's been discussing?
So from the 15 recommendations that we have asked the government to give a decision on the follow-up of those recommendations. So we choose 15 first recommendations. They have agreed on 9 of them. They have not communicated a lot. They means the government. They have not communicated a lot. I'm not sure they have the means to really implement what they have decided. But among the 9, we have, for example, to ban any professional who has been convicted with sexual pedocriminality, including in the medical sector. We have this sexual offenders file to be checked regularly. So we have those recommendations that got a positive decision from the government. But then now we need to see that good to speak, but we need acts and we need facts that it will really improve. But I agree with you. We have a lot of areas for improvement in France, in how we detect, in how we accompany the victim, how we repair the victim, and how we make sure that this will never happen again.
Hugo Le Monnier, picking up on what Solène just said and on Catherine Porter saying that, again, this was a case where the authorities went and in some cases informed the victims that they'd been a victim to a degree, especially if it was something that had been put in the back of their memory. Let me ask you, Hugo Le Monnier, how at the trial, what are they asking for, those victims? What do they want?
They want first to be recognized as victims. It was important for them, even though there was no doubt about the fact that they wanted to the justice to tell them that they were really victims. Because as some had no memories, it was hard for them to consider themselves as victims. And it's really troubling for a case that is described as the biggest pedocriminality case in France. And so this is the first point. The second point is they want the things to change. That's why they were waiting for the politicians to think through it. To look at that case, to debate about that case, and nothing happened.
Do you think it'll change now?
It's hard to say because, like the government said in 2021, after the Me Too incest, what we call Me Too incest is the wave of testimonies about incest. So the government said that they promised after that that things will change, and they created the CVs, the commission leading now Solen, and nothing when they did nothing after that. There has been recommendations, but there's no means and there's no political voluntary to apply them.
Political will. Mia Koyama, what do you tell other victims, those who feel shame, even though they haven't done anything wrong, they're the victims of the perpetrators, yet they still feel the shame. What do you tell them?
So first of all, the question of shame, you have to link it to the psychotrauma, meaning that the shame that the victims and survivors feel is not the shame. Their shame is the shame of the perpetrator, and it's very important. So that this is first an understanding and a training we have to do, and then afterwards, so healing and care is very important to get out of this so-called shame, and then afterwards we are trying to link every victim survivor together to have a collective and very strong voice in the public policy, in the public area, sorry. And this is the reason why also that our project of a victims or survivor council is to give victims and survivors the political voice and get out definitely, and get once and for all out of this shame. And also, victims council could accept and could you could be anonymous if you want to stay anonymous, but you can still participate in the public policies. And for victims and survivors, above all, what counts is that what the crimes they went through doesn't happen again. So they want to do everything that is in their power to end those crimes, whether it is the victims and survivors of Détarame, whether it is the victims of Joël Le Squarnec, and I pay tribute to their courage, because as Hugo said, there are a lot of trauma, and many of them didn't want to go public. But when they saw the decision makers were not speaking out on this trial and on these cases, they went, they gathered, and they wrote on the op-ed, they asked for measures, and they were very courageous to do that. So I really pay tribute to them.
And Wednesday will be the verdict in that trial. After 3 months, it'll be over. Something victims have thought about.
Obviously, it will bring great relief and a much-needed break, because our lives have been structured by these hearings for 3 months. There will no doubt be a kind of emptiness as well, because that structure has also provided the impetus for the struggles we've taken on to drive change and shift attitudes.
Your reaction, Solène Potvin-Favre, to that comment?
I think we urgently need to move from observation to action. We owe that for the victim.
All right, and you'll be Wednesday joining Hugo Lemonnier in Vannes for the verdict,
sure.
As will you.
Yeah, I will be in Vannes,
Catherine Porter, I want to thank as well Hugo Lemonnier for being with us from the Brittany Seaside
thank
City.
You.
Mie Koyama in Grenoble, thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.
Thank you for having me.